Hello, and welcome to the Inside Writing Podcast. I am your host, Josh Sippy. As a reminder, all of these episodes are recorded live, Wednesdays, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time. You can sign up on the Gotham Writers website for free. Now then, on to the show.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Inside Writing with Gotham Writers Workshop. My name is Angie Chapman, and the topic today is sensitivity reading. And I bet you want to know what that is. So one of the things that we're going to cover with our guests, Nicole and Sarish. So Nicole, you want to introduce yourself, and then we'll get started with answering the question of the day. What is sensitivity reading?
Hi, my name is Nicole Poles, and I'm a sensitivity reader based in Seattle. I mostly read for Native American representation.
And Sarish?
Yeah, hi. So I'm a sensitivity reader that's based in the UK. I read for Pakistani and Indian representation specifically, sometimes more generally South Asian, low immigrant difficulties, lower economic sort of lifestyles in the UK, and then sometimes I'll just have a British experience more generally as well.
Okay, so we have covered what you focus on, but exactly what are you looking at, you know, on the day-to-day thing? So Sahish, why do you pick up where you left off? What is the sensitivity reading?
I have a formal definition, if you want. It's sensitivity reading is the detection of insensitive issues in the manuscript, which fall under the editor's expertise and lived experience, which may include, but is not limited to, racism, bigotry, cultural inaccuracies, and ableism. So I don't know if Nicole will agree with that, but yes. That's sort of like what, you know, I'm with a group called Tessera. That's kind of our sort of broad definition for what sensitivity reading is. Basically, that just means that if there is a character that falls outside of the author's perhaps lived experiences, or they want to tell a story from a slightly different perspective than something they've personally lived, we read the book and just sort of check it, make sure that it's appropriate for coming out for publication. But yeah.
Nicole, anything to add?
I would second everything she said. Yeah, we read for respectful and accurate representation, because a lot of people, even despite best intentions, they don't know what they don't know. So it can be helpful to have someone, a second set of eyes who can read through and just point out things. Sometimes it's really, really small details that you wouldn't be able to easily find in research that you've done for your book or the piece that you're writing. And you can kind of highlight that and make a recommendation for something that's more accurate to say in its place, or something to give like a scene or a character more nuance, I guess.
Uh-huh. So I'm going to stick with you, Nicole. So, but, you know, I have one Native American friend. How come I just can't ask her?
I would say because being part of a marginalized group, different people have different experiences, and sometimes those experiences can be really emotionally taxing. One of the reasons why I feel like I'm able to read for Native representation is because I don't deal with the racism aspect personally. I don't constantly field the more difficult things that can come up when you're living in a situation with systemic racism. Everybody looks at me, and unless I tell them otherwise, they think that I'm white. So I have, I think, some more emotional resources to deal with people's well-intended ignorance about things in a way that doesn't take it quite so personally. But yeah, I wouldn't just go asking your Native friend.
For me, one of the ways this came up is when American Dirt came out, and how it blew up because it didn't represent the Latinx community accurately. And then it also had some scandalized stories about how the author represented herself. So did you see a pickup in that time, or how long have you been doing this? Because it sounds like something that really should have been happening for a while, and yet I don't feel like it has.
Yeah, it's funny that you bring up American Dirt. I haven't actually read that book, but that was when I became I feel like I started to become more aware of sensitivity reading kind of being a thing. I've been at it myself for about a year. But yeah, I think this is maybe a little bit of a cynical take, but I think that the cultural backlash and maybe the money aspect kind of drove home the decision that maybe these books should be vetted a little bit first in some situations, just to avoid something like that in the future. I don't think that that's the only reason to have a sensitivity read. I would like to think that it's a good thing to do just for, because it's the right thing, because you want to make sure that you're treating the characters you write with respect, and you want to make sure that your readers feel respected as well. And so, yeah, it seems like something that should have been around for a lot longer, but I think sometimes it takes some financial repercussions and some cultural blowback to drive the message home.
Yeah, the publishing industry is an industry, so they care about money. But is it different overseas, Sarisha?
Is it different overseas?
It's just Risha.
It's complicated. I've been editing and in publishing and doing sensitivity reads since I started, which was about 3 or 4 years ago. So the thing is, a lot of the times I've noticed is that obviously the US and the UK cultural landscape is very, very different. But a lot of our industries are the same and they bleed into each other. So even if I am aware of, say, very specific nuances within the UK lived experience and what UK society is like, sometimes you have to edit to a different standard or a different way, because a lot of books will go to the US, often books will come to the UK, and it's better safe than sorry. Like, I think the UK has, it's different because if you look at the histories of the two countries, obviously the I don't know whether you'll agree with me, so forgive me. But for the US, that obviously you had colonizers come into the country and superimpose a culture upon the indigenous population. Whereas in the UK, the indigenous population has pretty much remained for like several centuries. And we've had immigrants who have, well, they've been colonized, but they've then come over to the UK, and then they've had to merge their culture and make the indigenous population accepting of our culture. So do you understand? So like the approach and like the sensitivities.
Right.
And
where the actual blending, how did it happen?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And under what circumstances?
That can alter, obviously. Like, for example, I think the US suddenly feels like they're trying to strip back layers of paint to work out what the true culture is. Whereas the UK, we're trying to force the culture to evolve. They kind of, it's strange, because the end process, the sensitivity read, is exactly the same. But sometimes, like, the approach to it, and obviously how the countries have evolved in different ways, kind of can change the instinctive place where I start being as a sensitivity reader. Even if the end point is always things like, oh, okay, does this accurately represent what a person in this country would experience in this particular situation? Would, say, a British person of my skin tone in a group of white British people, A, react that way, B, behave that way, C, have a reaction of that way. Do you understand what I mean? So it's,
yeah, I definitely understand what you mean, because I lived in West Africa for a while, where I learned how much I was an American, even though I identified as just Black, right? I didn't have that country context. And so West Africa, and, you know, like all of the colonized countries, you know, it was this big divide between Francophone and Anglophone, and how the French wanted you to just be French, and the English wanted you to just stay what you were and just send us the money or the gold or the silver or the diamonds or whatever they were taking. And I was like, oh, my goodness, you really have to know, don't you? Do you, I mean, do you think that you're coming from a standpoint of history, or you're just doing, like you said, current lived experience is of character. And wait, so I'll let you think about it, and I'll go back to Nicole.
Same question?
With the question, do you think it's really just about lived experience, or is it also an historical context that you have to consider? And because what came out for me when I was sensitivity reading is that really the problem wasn't anything about the race. It was that it was just a flat character. It wasn't a fully developed character. So, you know, there's a lot of like aspects to this. And I'm have you found that to be true in your services?
Yeah, I mean, I think that history is inextricable from lived experience, especially within the Indigenous community. You know, our history, especially here on the West Coast, we've only been dealing with colonization really for about 170 years. We were able to keep our culture mostly pre-contact for a long time. And so the cultural memory of what happened when our Indigenous culture was disrupted, it's really fresh. We've got a lot of stories that, you know, most of us have heard our whole lives about boarding schools and, you know, treaty issues and Indian law and those kind of things. And there's a lot that I have not personally experienced myself. I feel like my life has been relatively privileged, but my family, the stories they have and the effects that I've seen those things have on them, it's just, it's inextricable. I've got my lived experience, which has been fairly assimilated. And then I've got my family's experience, which has been fairly tragic. And I just don't think there's really a way to separate those things.
Yeah, especially since now that's coming out, you know, all the burials in from the boarding schools in Canada and the U.S. I mean, I just feel like with my other Native friends, they're like, yeah, we knew about this. You know, it's like, this is not, you know, as opposed to, oh my God, did this really happen? So have you seen any of that in the writings coming down the pike? Because I know publishing is like months ahead of where we are in the newspapers.
I haven't seen any writings yet that have addressed boarding schools specifically. I had an author recently who had a few secondary Native characters in her book. And I adored her. She ended up being probably my favorite author that I've ever worked with. But there were a lot of things to address in her novel, just because the Native representation that she was familiar with was extremely dated and inaccurate. And there were some stereotypes in there, some pretty big ones, but it was so clear that her intent was there. She really respected the characters. She wanted to represent them well. She just didn't know what she didn't know. And she kind of wrote, you know, some history in there and the way that it affected the characters and their families. And I thought that was really good. So I do think that there are authors who understand that, you know, that history does impact lived experience. I've seen that. But yeah, it's good to have a sensitivity reader for those things for sure.
Cool. Suresh, what about you?
Yeah, it's complicated. So I don't know how to phrase this. Right. Okay. So when you've got lived experience, it can be kind of difficult, because obviously I grew up personally in a place where we were the first, it was a very, very white area, and we were one of the few families of color in that area. And then as I grew up, more and more people of color started coming to that area. So I sort of got to see like two extremes almost just in one life, in one childhood. So it's strange how you can extrapolate and understand in different places. Oh, this behavior is not out of the norm of how someone can behave, or this behavior is perhaps typical of someone who's raised in a more like multicultural society. So in terms of books that are written in the modern era, it's much easier because I've had a range of experiences. So it's much easier for me to pick nuances, and this person may behave in this way, even if they mean well, or they might say the wrong thing, but they mean well, so that's okay. Going back, my family person's had a long history in the UK. We didn't live in the UK for a while, but a lot of my family have studied in the UK. They came to university and then went back to Pakistan or India. So I have obviously a historical context in which I understand the books that are then being set. And then, like I say, because Britain has a long history and it's got a long colonial history, it's easier then to find references for how people, British people, or white British people would treat people of my skin tone, of my sort of ethnicity. And it's complicated because also Britain has the additional conversation of class, which has nothing to do with money. So like, it's strange how someone, how someone treats someone of a high class.
I watch Bridgerton. Yeah. I get it.
So, that's the thing. So sometimes you have a mixture of, you know, sometimes how this character is portrayed would fit with their ethnic background, what you would assume if they were of a lower class but had more money. But then this character, because they're of a high class but have no money, would be treated exactly the same, even if ethnically they have the same background. So it's a bit more nuanced, especially in historical fiction. Today, I think it's a bit easier, actually, personally, to go, okay, this is just a general experience. The further back in history you go, it's a bit more complicated, personally, I think.
So this makes it sound like this is really, you know, hard work. So how long does it take you to go through a manuscript? And Nicole, I'm going to come back to you because you said you really liked the author. And it's like, I haven't really dealt with my authors directly, maybe just one so far. So how does that... How does somebody find you, number one? And then what is the process like? Oh, and then I had a question we can add to that from the chat, which is, and do you, you know, does the genre matter? So do you only do like fiction or non or memoir? So have at it.
Well, I work for a book packager. And so what the book packager does is they're the ones who coordinate with a publisher and an author. And so if the publisher and the author decide that they want a sensitivity read for the author's book, they'll contact the book packager that I work for. And then the book packager will ask me if I would be interested in doing that project. Mm-hmm. I usually have about 2 to 3 weeks working for the book packager to do the sensitivity read, which I find is usually, so far at least, been enough time. Sorry, I forgot the third part of the question.
The third part of the question was, you know, how do you get to work closely with the author, especially since you're a contractor with this other service?
Well, in that particular case, the author actually reached out through the book packager. Usually the process of sensitivity reading includes making notes in the markup of the manuscript, and then sending a letter also where you can kind of explain your notes and elaborate on them a little bit better, which I find to be really helpful because sometimes you want to be really clear about your tone because it's a vulnerable place to be in as a writer. And you want to be able to communicate, I think, to the writer that you're giving them the benefit of the doubt. And, you know, here's what you're trying to say when you've left these notes in the text.
But they're not really racist.
Right.
But we all are. You know, we all are. We have these labels.
What's that?
We have these labels. So, you know, it's nothing to be really ashamed of, especially since you're working on getting it right in the book.
Right. Yeah. And usually that's the extent of the interactions that I have with the author, is leaving the notes in the text. But I think in this particular sensitivity read, because the notes were a little bit more extensive, and because she was a really sweet person, she just reached out with a thank you letter, and there was some communication that way, and I just really appreciated that, and I appreciated her, and yeah, so that was why I had a little more interaction with that author.
Okay, cool. And Suresh, how does it work?
So I have a completely different experience from Nicole, actually. So I edit with a group called Tessera, with Tessera Editorial. So what we are is we're a consortium of independent editors. So it starts, the actual consortium started about 3 or 4 years ago, about the same time. So it started because we run a training program for people of color specifically, so that the mission is to diversify publishing.
Yay!
So yeah, so that's kind of the goal. So most, if not all of our editors are people of color, and it's the workshop is free, and it's run by a very lovely lady called Krista, and she does everything for free, and it's like, that's like a big passion project for her. So because we're independent editors and it's a consortium, what ends up happening is that authors will have to look us up personally, but they go to the website and they put in a request for maybe what we have, like a list of our editors on the page. So you can either pick a specific editor or just say what you're looking for. And then Krista will sort of send jobs to like whoever is appropriate for each request. Then we pretty much take over because we're all independent, and then we communicate with the authors directly. Sometimes it's an author, sometimes it's a publishing company, but we are sort of in contact with whoever needs, whoever's asked for the sensitivity read. So yeah, unlike Nicole, I'm interacting with many, many authors all the time. So I not only do I leave notes, I send a sensitivity letter. I have, you know, people will email me back with questions and I'm emailing them back, and it's quite collaborative. If that's what the author wants to do, it can be quite collaborative. Sometimes people just want to know what they did wrong, and then, you know, because no one intends on doing anything wrong, but what they did wrong, and then that's it. But yeah, it can differ from person to person.
And the genres, that was the other part of the question, what genres do you specifically look at? Does this kind of sensitivity read apply to all genres? I think that's the other thing that the questioner was asking.
On a personal level, I don't discriminate between genres. So I enjoy reading everything. So I will edit sensitivity wise for everything. So that's no problem. Mm-hmm. For the most part, I don't think that for the most part, nonfiction necessarily requires a sensitivity read. If you're speaking from, say, if it's like an autobiography and it's your life, I'm not going to argue with you about what your life is about. I'm just like, fair enough, that's your experience. But fiction, and especially if you're talking about non-historical facts, but on like a period of history that you yourself have not studied in, like from the other person's perspective, I've done even children's books where I think it was one about an elephant, and this is a small detour, I'm sorry. This is about an elephant who was either saved or killed, one or the other. And what ended up happening was the end story, there was one page where they just said that they reached a plantation and everyone felt safe. And that was the only point where that was the only page that I had to correct. Cause I was like, you're talking about a whole group of people who are not white coming to a place where it's a white place in a white country. And then you're saying that peaceful is not the word. Quiet, even I'll accept. Peaceful is not the word. No one entering that situation is going to be calm.
The word plantation has some bells going off there. Let's not even call it that, you know?
Yeah. So yeah. I was like, and then they'll, you know, I query that too, but they were like, that was the word at the time that they used in the reference. I was like, okay, we can, if that's what they used in the diary, we'll let that go. But maybe if we're adding the word peaceful, let's change that to quiet. Let's add a bit of context. And, you know, it's tiny details like that that you don't realize how that can feel or how that can come across or what kind of jigsaw pieces it can build to create like an overall wrong picture of the scenario. But where possible, I try and fix the jigsaw pieces. That's it.
Cool. Okay. So some of the other things that have come up in the questions, Nicole, so like you said, your lived experience is not only being a native, it's also being a woman. So do you deal with other issues like sexism or maybe religious preferences or stuff like that? Or does the team does or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you can get sensitivity reads for just about any kind of experience or background. I don't do sensitivity reads for everything. There are some things that I don't read for because I don't feel like I have sufficient life experience to do the issue justice. There's at least one other issue that I won't read for because I feel like it's too emotionally triggering for me to really give the author the kind of benefit of the doubt that they deserve. But I do read for multiple things. I read for Native representation. I read for feminist issues, sometimes like mental health stuff. And then other times, publishers don't always want to pay for multiple sensitivity readers. So sometimes I'll get a book that primarily needs attention paid to Native representation, but there will be some secondary stuff in there. And in that case, I just do my best to catch it and I do my research. There's a style guide you can find online called the Conscious Style Guide that I've found to be really helpful. And so I'll do my research and I'll try to address those issues as best I can, because I feel like somebody needs to try and catch it. And I might be the only sensitivity reader that sees that manuscript, but there are definitely just a few things that I specialize in.
That's really generous of you. Plus, I also heard a word that I wanted to go back to, and that's the trigger. Because yes, when I'm reading, sometimes I just get so pissed off. And then other times I feel like that I have to go take a shower, you know? And I'm wondering, how do you protect yourself from these ignorance, you know, because I won't, like you said, not put it on them that they're purposely doing this, but it's just ignorance. And after all, I can assume that it's ignorance, because then they wouldn't have a sensitivity read. But it is. I mean, I had one who was writing about a slave and how she, you know, her master raped her repeatedly, and how, you know, the book was that she eventually came to love him. And I'm like, no, you know. So anyway, yeah, how do you do that? And Sarisha, we'll go back to you.
That's a heavy question. So there are definitely things that, for the most part, I don't mind, like a lot of the requests. I don't tend to refuse requests that come to me. For the most part, I feel equipped to handle them. So I'm also Muslim and like a bunch of other things as well. So like, the scope of what I can read for can be quite broad. And, you know, especially when it comes to religious biases, people normally, if I pick Islam as an example, people know like, oh, they pray a lot, right?
And we're all religious people pray a lot, or they're supposed to.
That's the thing. So like, they'll pick a Muslim character, and it's very like, they're a very nice person, but they're not like, I mean, the common reference I keep using is, I don't know if you saw that, I haven't even seen the show, but there was a clip from a Netflix show where there's like a Muslim person and she's fasted all day and she breaks the fast and then she says Alhamdulillah and then she takes a shot. And I was like, even the most non-religious like Muslim person I've ever met wouldn't bother doing a full day of fasting to break it with alcohol. And that defeats the entire function of like not eating all day. So... It's
oh my god, we should just have to laugh at something like that.
Yeah,
right?
Sometimes
you know
it's
that there's
just,
nobody in the room.
You know, it's just sometimes it's just so absurd that more than being annoyed, you're sort of laughing. You're like, how did you get it? Like, what picture did you have to get to this level? Exactly. So yeah, there have been things I've refused because like historical projects where I don't have a positive opinion of the person who was being written about. So I will go, like, there's no way I can give you an objective sensitivity read because you're praising all the positive bits and they may have done positive things, but I find the negative things too much for me to even like put a personal stamp on the approval of the book being published. So I'll go, if you want to have that book done, I'm not the person for you. I've had a couple of books that have made me want to tear my hair out. Truthfully, I've had a couple that you're just like, and the thing problem is as well that the authors, they don't mean it and they take on all the advice you give them. But honestly, the best thing to do for some books is just to tear them up and start from the ground again. And there's no other way of getting around it. It's just the very foundation is based on so many inaccuracies. It actually doesn't work as a story. But obviously you don't want to tell people that because by the time as well that people come to you as a sensitivity reader, they've done the developmental editing, they've done the copy editing, they're in like all the way to the deals and like the sensitivity edit is like the last thing they check off. And you're sitting there going, you should have come way before all of that stuff. Like you should have come about the developmental and I could have told you there was a fundamental flaw in your story, but now it's too late. And it just feels like, you know, like it's difficult because sometimes as well, I don't know if you agree, both of you, but sometimes it feels like someone is just ticking you off in a list and it doesn't matter whether you say yes or no, because as a sensitivity reader, you give your suggestions, whether they apply it is up on them, but they can always say, I had a sensitivity reader look over it. They don't say I didn't listen to anything she said, but like they can say that they had one and you're like, okay, well.
Yeah, I mean, okay. that's why I mentioned, you know, in this book, it was a really cool book. And it wasn't that they did anything wrong. It's just that, you know, she was flat, you know, and it's like everybody else, you know, had this wonderful backstory and they had family and they had motive and she just got a paragraph. And so what I did is I wrote a really long critique of that character. And then my editor said, no, you know, they won't read it that long. So you need to cut it back. And I understand your passion, but you know, it won't fly. So yeah, you know, we're still at the whim. We're still subjected to the publishing industry and their timelines and all those kind of things. So that's a good point. Yeah. So what would you like to see changed? You know, I mean, because one of the things I'm telling myself now is that 10 years ago, this wouldn't have happened. You know, we wouldn't be reading stuff. So progress is being made, but it's like, how much further can we go? So Nicole, would you have a suggestion?
I mean, I'm going to piggyback on something that Sarish said earlier, which is diversity in publishing. You know, I think one of the things that I was thinking about in preparation for this session last night was the possibility or the situation where a white author is writing about a minority character, kind of like the American Dirt situation. And when is that justifiable? And is it ever justifiable? And I do think it can be a nuanced issue, but I think it doesn't really need to be an issue at all so much if you have a more diversified publishing industry.
Yes, that is definitely number one. And especially since, you know, whoever said that she wasn't white because she had a Puerto Rican grandmother conveniently appear. One of the questions, let me go through the Q&A again and give you guys a quick break to sip some water or something. So where does most of this come up in the story? Marlon says, do we find a lot of issue with dialogue? For me, it was just the character description that time and then the premise. But, you know, where else does it show up in the book? You know, so if we had an author who said, you know, I really want this to work, where should I look in my manuscript to fix things by myself, for example? So, Sarish, what do you suggest?
It doesn't necessarily have to be dialogue, although as a British editor who often gets authors who are American, sometimes like the national joke, I'm sorry, is that the the worst British accent on film is Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins. It's a given. And, you know, lovely actor, lovely man, but that's not.
It doesn't sound like a Brit at all.
Not even slightly. And so sometimes it, like, you know, yeah, when I see something like very Dick Van Dyke-esque, then you kind of have to go, well, this isn't how any British person talks, regardless of class, environment, anything. No one talks like this. So it doesn't have to be that it's dialogue based necessarily, but sometimes it's just too much for us to ignore. For the most part, I think it comes down to actual character building, I think. Because sometimes what we're talking about in the actual sensitivity read are like, these are things that are fundamental to this character's lived experience. So that will affect and permeate throughout everything the character does. Like, you know, like for example, I'm taking to an extreme, but if you say you have a character that grew up in an abusive home, the way they react to, say, shouting will be different to someone who grew up in a very like open communication, like someone who had soft parenting as a child. Like everything can affect what the backstory is. Do you know what I mean? So it becomes like a more of a holistic reading than necessarily, you know, this description is wrong or this, that, whatever. Because I'm sure for every one experience that an author writes, there's going to be one person in the world that applies to. Always is going to be one person. But then you have to look at, okay, like on a more general scale, would this specific experience then behave that way? It becomes a bit more of a psychological thing as well, not necessarily just, you know, the food you put out as in like for an Indian family meal isn't quite right, or like anything like that. It can be a bit more, like I say, holistic.
Why they call them characters, right? Is because it's character motivation, it's character description, it's character wording. All of those things are part of their character. And if you get the one wrong, then the rest of it is not really accurate either, because that's you're supposed to make a character that's just completely believable. And if you have somebody who, like you said, happens to have some Indian food on the table, because that's what makes them Indian, it's like, one, you're missing an opportunity, but two, it's not sincere. So, yeah. Nicole, what have you seen lately?
I've seen issues that should be addressed in dialogue. I think that's one that I'm likely to see more of in the future, because I read for Native American representation. And I think that there are, some old films and stuff where the speech of Native Americans is portrayed in a very specific way. And that is not how we talk. I've never heard any Native American person talk like that. So that's a thing that I've had to address before. I've also found it in descriptions of people. I can't remember the specific place I saw this, but I feel like I've also seen it in the way the character thinks about themselves, where it's like, okay, the Native American character you're describing these thoughts that they're having, but that's not how they would think of this specific situation.
Yeah. What came to mind is I forgot where I was watching it, but it came up. And my kids, we were watching The Lone Ranger, and they're like, why do you have this up? And I'm like, oh, this is what we watched when we were kids. She's like, oh my God, you guys are disgusting. And I'm like, yay, new generation. Where, no, that was supposed to be accurate. That was entertainment. And I felt so ashamed. Except for the fact that, actually that was all there was too, So the fact that, we need diversity on all layers is just, that's just another sad example. But I was very touched by my kids that they immediately were disgusted and walked out of the room. Turn that off, Mom. Why are you, I don't even know how that gets on TV. And I'm like, oh, it's the old TV shows stations. Mm-hmm. So another question we have is, do we ever get a person of color where as the author, and they're missing something too because their lived experience is limited? And Suresh, I think this really goes to you, because like you said, the British system is just so convoluted, especially to us Americans, that there's ways that people of color I really want to come back to Bridgerton. Because a lot of my friends were like, oh, this is such a diverse cast. This is such a diverse cast. And I'm like, not really. They might look of a certain color, which is nice. And definitely Renee is a hottie, but they didn't behave in certain ways, or they had to explain it, or all those kind of things. So you can ignore the Bridgerton part, but just tell me, what do you think in terms of even the writers of color getting things wrong?
I think it's writers of color getting things wrong. There, I have had a couple of people, of writers of color in particular, get things wrong, I'm hesitant to use, because sometimes it's just not a broader experience that they're talking about. They're talking from their perspective. So it doesn't necessarily mean they've got it wrong, but it means that unfortunately the audience that they're sending the book out into is much, they've got a wider range of experiences, and you don't know until you talk to a large group of people, whether your experience is in the majority or the minority. Mm-hmm. So one particularly stressful area to write in as a person of color, I think personally, is in historical romance. Because more than once you'll have, if you look at, actual history, if you look at like just the trend of historical romance, like the set formula, if you will, of that, then there's always like a man who was very wealthy, secretly some sort of baron or duke or something like that. And he's always wealthy, but if the author doesn't want to be explicit when the money has normally come from like a slave colony in like, you know, Jamaica or somewhere, like if that's normally where the money from the character has come from, it's just not explicitly stated. So I sometimes feel pity because sometimes authors of color, they just want to follow the formula, but mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like a lot of the quiet assumptions that are made are racist in and of themselves. And you've got to sort of balance between how much course correcting do you want to do? Do you want to have to rewrite all of history when you're trying to write like a very simple feel-good historical romance where it's just the romance but you have fancy ball gowns? But like sometimes people, you know, but then sometimes people will read it and they think that you're trying to correct history and that it becomes way much, it becomes
more almost, than a simple read.
Yeah, and it becomes so much more convoluted.
It's not an escape book, you know, if you're going to put in all this other stuff. And it's like, I just wanted an escape book.
Yeah, so and that's like, and all the author wanted to do was to have the heroine or the other way around, the hero, just look a little bit like more like them. They wanted this, like, they wanted the, you know, because also it's strange that we ask people of color for a level of accuracy we don't ask for from white authors, I've tend to notice. We ask, you know, like a white author is allowed to just use the formula and it's fine and it's okay. And everyone acknowledges it's meant to be a light read, like a pleasure read. And then that's it, it's put away. White people of color, when they want to use the same formula, they just want to make sure that the characters look like them a little bit, suddenly have to go into a deep dive of historical. And I don't know, it's complicated because I understand on one hand, you know, you want to love pleasure read, but also on the other hand, you understand, okay, the whole system was racist, but how do you
merge the two
together?
But does anybody really follow that in the moment when you just want to get the girl?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. It's tricky. It's tricky.
Yeah, it is. That,
unfortunately.
So the other thing that's coming up a lot is then how do you find someone like you? Now, you said that you actually work for, both of you work for firms as like independent contractors. So how would they, you know, find you? Can you just Google sensitivity read and it pops up?
I mean, you could probably do it that way. I would imagine that you could go to a place like Readsy online and probably find sensitivity readers there. If you're self-publishing, you're going to need to probably look for a sensitivity reader on your own online through a platform like Readsy. But if you're going through a publisher, I think that your publisher can probably help you find one and find one for you.
Okay. Same for you, Suresh?
So, I mean, I work with a very specific group. So for us, you'd have to literally type in Tessera editorial and then—
Okay, let me type in that for everybody. It is www.tess.
Yeah, E-R-A.
E-R-A.com. Okay.
Tessera editorial.
Okay. And then the other question that comes up is that how did you even get into this business? Right. I mean, for me, it was like, you know, totally chance. I didn't say, wow, you know, American Dirt wasn't, there should have been a way to correct that. I'm going to find a company that does that and have them hire me. That's not what happened. How did it happen for you, Nicole?
It was kind of a process for me. I mean, ultimately it happened because the book packager I worked for sent out a survey asking if anyone was interested in doing sensitivity reads, any of their copy editors, and if what would they like to read for?
All right.
But it took a while, I think, probably over the course of several months for me to even talk myself into the idea that it was— enough experience, enough knowledge to put myself in that place. You know, I feel like, I don't know, it's a humbling position to be in.
In what way? I didn't feel it humbling. I felt like I had a superpower.
I mean, yes, that it's definitely rewarding and I definitely really like doing it. I think part of it is maybe specific to my background. You know, part of being Native American is for a lot of people growing up and being told you're not a real Indian. Mm-hmm. And so I really had to, a months-long process, I think, of reckoning with that and realizing that that experience actually can be a legitimate part of the Native American experience. And it can be, yeah, beneficial to have a sensitivity reader who's experienced that and can be on the lookout for that. But
yeah, it's actually necessary. Months. Let me pat you on the back then, Nicole.
Thank you.
And Suresh?
Could you remind me of the question? I got so caught up in the answer. Sorry, Nicole's answer. I was mesmerized and then I forgot.
Yeah, I know. Wasn't that a good one? Because it's like, wow. No. So, you know, how do people find you now, but how did you even get involved in this? Right? Because it's a pretty new thing, you know? And so you don't necessarily say, oh, I love to read crap and tell people how to fix it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Mine's kind of a long story. Sorry. So,
Good. We got time.
I've been teaching English since I was 13. So, first I actually applied to be an editorial assistant to Krista, the woman I mentioned in the beginning. So she was looking for just an assistant. She was looking to train them up to become an editor on their own back. So that obviously, again, like I say, it's a passion project to increase diversity. So a lot of us applied and she liked a lot of our CVs. So she ended up forming a workshop. It was meant to be one-off just to train us to be editors. We all had the soft skill set, but obviously no avenues into publishing. Then we did sessions with her. She trained us, she tested us, she made sure we were up to par with like professional standards. And then that we were supposed to be it. That was supposed to be the final bit. And then we were all supposed to go and get a couple of, become aware of the landscape of publishing and that let publishers be aware of us as well. And then that would have been it. We would have been editors in our own right. However, because it just kind of evolved, we all liked each other as a group. So we all just kept hanging out and like chatting with each other. And eventually she said, should we just turn this into a thing? We turn it into a group. We said, yeah, sure. So then it sort of kept evolving quite organically, very by accident. And then now we're on, I think, cohort 8. It's like we've had 8 different like whole sessions of people being trained. We have people added to the staff list every 6 months, just being added constantly. And it's become like, it's very, very organic. It's very lovely. As to how I became a sensitivity reader, I read a lot. Like I read a lot. So I was a bookworm as a child, and I still am, unfortunately. And and I'm also a bit of a history buff. So by the time, when someone asked me just to do for a one-off, say, okay, can you check representation in this or in that? I had like a catalog of like references, and I knew like historical references, what to do. And it kind of grew from there, really. So.
That's so cool. That is just so cool, especially the organic and liking people you work with.
Yes, it's lovely. It's lovely to talk to people you love with. Yeah, definitely.
Because that's one of the things with COVID. It's like people are discovering, I really don't want to work with you anymore. Not the job, you. So one of the questions from Marlon again is she's like, as readers, if you find something insensitive, what can you do? I mean, it's already out, where can she go? Because she's written a lot about, she's has a Hawaiian background and she's found it, there's some insensitivity about how we got that 50th state as well as what's going on now, So any suggestions?
The thing that comes to mind, I guess, is writing to the publisher. I mean, in terms of who can really affect change going forward, I think you have to go with the people who hold the money. So definitely. I think, the book's already out there. If you're not going to change the book itself, maybe you can change books in the future by, again, suggesting diversity in publishing and sensitivity reads for books.
And there's always reviews. Like you can go on Goodreads and type up a review. You could go on Twitter, type up a review, and people pay attention to that. I think that's one of the ways American Dirt got hit, right? Because she had a New York Times review and, even that was not totally positive, and yet nothing happened until people got on board and said, oh, hell no.
I think sometimes I've also had in our group as well, people have tried to come back to the editors, like us, the sensitivity readers, and we're sitting there going, we can't do anything about it. We're not in charge of the money. Like that's, unfortunately, that's where the power is. So
yeah,
definitely I'd say contact the publishers.
Yeah. Yeah, good idea. So Betty asks, you know, we've been talking about people of color and I shouldn't say non-majority because Muslim is a majority religion, just not here. let's think globally, people. If there's an Italian family or an Irish family, do you find somebody who's, you know, comes from an Italian background? Nicole, do you? Yeah. Or does your firm do that, do you think?
It's possible. I don't know everything that they conduct sensitivity reads for. Mm-hmm. I think a lot would depend on, you know, the setting of the book and the plot of the book. But I think if there's sensitive stuff in there, then yeah, definitely you could.
Yeah, I think. And Suresh, what about you?
Oh yeah, definitely. There are multiple times where people are just looking for a sensitivity read, and then once I email them, if the job has been assigned to me, by the time I sort of have to work through what exactly they're looking for. And by the time they've told me in detail what they're looking for, I realize I'm not the right editor. So then I'll farm it back out to people at Tessera. And I'll say, whoever fits this description, please contact me. I've got a job for you. And, you know, a lot of the times we don't have that sensitivity reader. So then we'll have to email back and say, we don't have anyone for you, but you can find them online. So.
Yeah. I mean, I would think any heritage needs to be honest and true. I mean, and we go back to, you know, developing your character so that they're believable to as many people as possible. So if it's Italian and, you know, all you say is they had lasagna for dinner, that's not enough. Let me see. How do you feel when a book character is written in one race, but then it's on the movies, it gets swapped? And I shouldn't have brought up Bridgerton so much. Do you have any, have you watched it? I keep on bringing it up. I don't even know if you guys have seen it.
I have. Nicole's
nodding yes. What do you think?
I liked the first half really well. I watched the whole thing. I thought the second half was mostly sex scenes, not a lot of plot development, but I did enjoy the series, yeah.
You know, I'm always against a movie version of a book. You know, because it never comes out the way I want it to be. Because, you know, that's the beauty of reading to me, is that I get to make up most of that stuff in my own head. And I've rarely seen a movie that does it well. But now my daughter is in the film business, and she's promised me that when my book comes out and she makes a movie of it, she's going to make sure it's exactly the way I intend it.
No, I disagree with you, actually, I have to say. I like adaptations because to me, that's all it is. It's just an adaptation. It's a version of the story being told. I don't necessarily think it has to be the adaptation. I mean, whether it's a good man or a bad man.
But you're so mad about Dick Van Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke is just funny. It's a natural joke, to be fair. But, you know, I'm not going to hold it against him. So, you know, it's just a version.
So did you see the next one with, what's the
Emily
guy
Blunt?
From?
Huh? Dawn? One with Emily Blunt or?
Yeah, with Emily, yeah.
Yeah, I did. I love, I like Mary Poppins. So, you know, I was like, I'll just watch that one too, it's fine. in my head, I have no problem with like allowing them both to exist at the same time. It's all right with me, it's okay.
Okay, cool. All right, let me see what else do we have in here. Okay, yeah, so we have Athena's agreeing with you.
Okay, good.
yeah, cool, all right. So any closing remarks that you want to make? So we've covered how to find you or how to find somebody like you. We've covered some do's and don'ts. We've covered some horror stories. What else do you think I should leave my audience with? Because we got some really good questions from them though too.
I had a horror story actually planned because obviously you gave me some questions for the prep. Oh, cool. It just never came up organically. But the problem is as well, is that they're very, very specific. And I don't want to embarrass the authors or anything. But all I will say is quite a few of them, I've read quite a few sci-fi books, space operas in particular, that have it's straight, like the science in the book is very, very developed. So everyone knows how a spaceship works. They know all of those things to such an advanced level. They've moved out and they live across the galaxy. They all have different, they live on different planets. But yet some of them have like an Indian accent. And I'm like, why? They're not even on India anymore. They're on a completely different planet. Like, you're just like, conceptually, what happened? It's strange. Yeah, it's like the tiny details, but.
No, well, it's like they took, you know, everything that was still about this world and just transferred it to outer space. And it's like, no, that's not what you need to do. You need to, do an Ursula Le Guin and come up with new type of, I don't want to say characters, but, and they're not necessarily humanoids, but a new kind of race, you know, that doesn't see race.
It was very confusing because the representation itself was actually lovely. All of it was wonderful. It didn't make any sense. I was like, why would those things even be existing that far into the future where they've all moved to live on different planets? Like, something had stopped flowing in the narrative arc of the story. And I had to go, okay, well, all right.
That would be extremely depressing if this continued all the way out into outer space. So would you all mind sharing your email addresses with the group? Is that okay so that they can contact you?
Sure.
Okay, Nicole, what's yours?
Should I just put it in the chat?
Yeah, would you please? Yeah, both do that for me. Thank you. That way I make sure I spelled it right. And Josh, do we have anything else to say about the next issue? The next Inside Writing show?
Yeah, so we're going to be back next Wednesday. We're talking to Ken Davenport, who's a Broadway producer. It'll be just standard Inside Writing procedure. So we'll see you then.
Okay, Suresh, could you put your email address? Or I got for Tessera, right?
So yeah, that's you can, if you want me specifically, you can request for me on the actual website.
Yeah, cool. All right, great. Well, thank you all both for coming. It's nice to meet you virtually.
Thank you for
having us. And I appreciate you all being here. And let's go ahead and continue to work on those books and make sure everyone is represented accurately. And really, it just comes down to develop your characters thoroughly, each and every one, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Cool. All right. Thank you, ladies. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.